Hi, this is Lisa Coleman. You're listening to Jedi Nation.
And welcome back to Jedi Nation Podcast. This is your boy, DJ Jedi, and we have a very special guest tonight, somebody I've known off and on through the internet for, I don't know, quite a while now, but he is a writer who has just released his first book. He is a musician. He was the Real Music Radio Artist of the Month for June, and he was in this little cult movie called Return of the Jedi with his father, Billy D. Williams. Welcome to the show, my boy, my buddy, Corey D. Williams. Well, thanks for joining
us. Thank you.
Man.
Thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah.
But we've known each other a long time, actually. I was thinking about the other day when that first – I don't know if you remember. You meet so many people, but we met at the Motor City Comic Con way back.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember you for sure, man.
Okay, yeah, because at first we came on a Friday, and your dad wasn't coming until Saturday. So I was like, oh, wait, you guys, you and your buddy Steven was there, right, if I remember right? And
And
you guys were talking, you know, you and I started talking about music and about funk and the kind of music we liked. And then the rest is history. And I've been following what you've been doing on the social medias and all that since then. Now, the funny story, I got to tell you a little bit about the interaction with your dad, which is kind of hilarious and embarrassing all at once, is that, you know, so I when I walked up to the booth, there he was. And to you, he's your dad, right? I mean, you know he's famous, but he's dad, right? I mean,
right.
And I'm walking up to the booth, and I could feel my face getting all warm. And I'm like, oh, gosh, don't, you know, pull this together. So I walked up to your dad, and I said, hey, nice to meet you. Thanks for, you know, everything your role as Lando meant to me as a child. I said, around my buddy's circle, there were Han guys. There were Luke guys. I said, but I was a Lando guy. And your dad did that laugh, that Billy D. Lando laugh. And so, you know, we signed my autographs. We talked for a few minutes. I walked away. And my son's girlfriend, who's now my daughter-in-law, she looks at me and she's like, you are glowing. And I'm like, yeah, I don't get starstruck much. I'm like, well, that's Billy D, you know. And then I'm just trying to get myself together. So that's when we met. There's my embarrassing story about your dad. And, he's one of my very favorites of all time. So it's awesome. Awesome that I got to meet him. And
well, he appreciates it. He appreciates it. You know, it's a humbling experience to be out there and have people appreciate something that you did so long ago, you know, and for it to continue like that. So he appreciates all of it.
Yeah, it's...
You know, it gets a little repetitive sometimes, but for the most part, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, did you really mean to turn Han in, or was it just because you were forced
right.
to? You know?
Right.
So it was great to see him in the new ones. That was like, you know, made my life as well. So that was totally cool. So a lot of people don't know that one of my favorite stories is that you told was how you got involved and you ended up being in Return of the Jedi. So I'm going to shut up because I can just sit and talk all night. Tell us about how you got into Star Wars.
Well, we're both talkers, so it's you're going to have a lot of editing to do probably when it comes
to
this.
I have extra tape. Yeah, exactly. So,
you'll have more than enough, trust me. Well, you know, it's a story I've told quite a few times, I guess. But basically, it was my first job working as a stand-in for my father. So my father asked me if I wanted to start working as a stand-in for him. And I've been on many sets, you know, growing up. When I was a young kid in New York City, my father was not famous. He didn't become famous until I was a teenager. But, you know, I started traveling to different movie sets with him, and I'd been on sets, and so I know what shoots are like. You know, it's kind of boring and tedious stuff. Like, it's exciting for about the first 15 minutes, and then once you figure out that they're just going to do the same thing over and over again for hours, like, oh, my God. But he approached me about being a stand-in. So as a stand-in, your job is to basically help set up the shot. So the actors come in, they do their rehearsal, and the stand-in watches the rehearsal and then does all the movements that the actor does. So it's like choreography. They might have marks on the ground for you to stand on, and different places where they have to have key lighting or different camera moves, or the camera might be on a dolly that has to move through a certain way. And so it sometimes can take an hour or more to set that stuff up. And, you know, they want to have let the actor have an opportunity to relax or, you know, work on his lines or whatever he needs to do during that time period. So, you know, as a stand-in, you you help the crew set up. So that was kind of my capacity going into it. I was hesitant to go because Steven and I actually had a band at that time, and we were working on a record deal. And, you know, we had a couple of labels interested in us, but we needed to have a solid demo done. And so we were kind of working on songs for the demo and working on the demo. And I really didn't want to leave that, you know, in order to go on a movie set. But, you know, it was Star Wars.
I remember you telling me that. Yeah. You were like, come on, Dad. The band's got to practice. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And of course, it hadn't reached the legendary status that it's at now. But, I mean, of course, it was a really popular movie series, obviously. I mean, by the time they got to Jedi, the third movie. But, so, you know, I said, okay, I'll go and work as a stand-in. And the first thing we did when we got there, you know, I flew on the plane with Carrie Fisher and my dad and got to know her a little bit. She was a hoot. And yeah. And we got there, and they handed us these Blue Harvest T-shirts. And, you know, a lot of fans know about the Blue Harvest story where, you know, it was a cover-up for Return of the Jedi in the city of Yuma, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are these Blue Harvest T-shirts? I thought we were going to be working on Return of the Jedi, man. Which, actually, it was called Revenge of the Jedi, I think, at that point. It wasn't even Return, and then they decided to drop the Revenge and make it Return. But,
you know, yeah, I was part of the Star Wars fan club, and I was, they sent out patches, like, to put on your jean jackets, and it says Revenge of the Jedi on it. So I have a Revenge of the Jedi patch. They said it's worthless, though, because they can be duplicated really easy, so you really can't verify the authenticity.
Right.
But
right.
You know, I got it in the mail with my Star Wars Insider book back in the day, so I was legit.
I actually have an ashtray that they gave my father, because it said Revenge of the Jedi on it, so I actually still have that.
Now, that's probably worth something. That's got to be worth something. That's cool, though. No, go ahead. So you get out to Yuma. It's hot as heck.
Oh, yeah. It's 110 degrees in the shade there, man. I mean, probably never desert heat, you know. And so we, you know, I remember taking a trip out to the set. It was amazing. I mean, it was mind-blowing. So it was quite a ways away from the hotel where we were staying, or motel, I should say. There wasn't really much in Yuma, Arizona at that time, you know, maybe a couple of restaurants and a few motels. And so, you know, it was quite a ride out to the set every day that we had to take. And then they packed compacted sand coming off of the highway to take you out to between these dunes. And when you came between these dunes, the whole set just sort of opened up in front of you, and there's a life-size version of half of Jabba's sail barge in the middle of the desert with a fence around it, you know, and security so that no one would mess with it. And not a lot of people knew it was there at the time. There was a few ATVs coming out to check it out, but then, you know, the longer we were there, the more people started to find out about it and, you know, show up sort of hanging around trying to see, you know, what's going on the set. But it was, you know, it was a pretty impressive setup. I mean, it was huge. I mean, you know, it was just this ginormous set on a huge platform that had the Sarlacc pit built into it. And, you know, so the Sarlacc pit was actually made out of wood, and they pumped sand up onto it every day to make it blend in with the horizon when they were up there shooting. And so it was kind of scary to be up there because, you know, there are no rails or anything, and you're up pretty high up off the ground, so you kind of stayed away from the edges of it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
You'd be head first like 3PO was.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
That's
yeah,
cool.
I mean,
the middle of the desert. Dad, somebody.
Yeah, so they had an airbag under it that you would basically, you know, when the stunt guys would fall into the hole, they would fall into this airbag and then crawl out. But if you
hit the sides of it and went off, you were done. Like, you were dropping. Cause there was
you didn't want to hit the sides of it.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys actually, you know, rolled in more or less, you know. There was a few stunt guys. There was one particular stunt guy that did stunts for my father who was brave enough to dive straight into the hole, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But not too many people did that, you know.
I like the idea that I just love that story when he first told me, like, you know, here's Dad saying, "Hey, we're going to go out and do Star Wars," and you're like, "Man, I'm serious about my band, like the Star Wars thing."
Right.
I just love that. I could, you know. You know, here's millions of guys across the country that would just die for that moment. And Corey's
right.
Like, "Yeah, you know, I got to work on a band. This is serious stuff here."
Well, one of the things that enticed me to go was because he said I could bring Steven with me. You know, he said, "Well, you guys can, you know, see, you can bring Steven. You guys can continue working on the music. You know, when you're not on the set." And I was like, "Sounds like a deal to me." So we brought our axes with us and a little tape recorder. And when we were in our hotel room at night, after we got all the sand out of our ears and nose and
everything else,
you get sand in places that you didn't even realize you could get sand when you're out there like that. And Sam's rolling around. But, yeah, you know, we had crew and cast members and stuff coming to our room and listening to us jam, you know, in the evening sometimes, because there really wasn't a lot to do, you know, when you weren't out on the set filming.
So you had, like, the whole gang, a bunch of the gang down there in your room while you guys are jamming out, being serious musicians, working on your demos and stuff, right? And so
having some fun and downtime, you know. We like to jam and perform, you know.
And the parties in Corey's room, just follow the bass.
Yeah, it was a little bit like that at times.
I bet.
You know,
how long
sure.
were you guys out there? How long was that shot, that shoot for you? How long were you there?
You know, I don't really remember exactly, but I think it was probably somewhere to between a 7 to 10 days, I would think.
Okay. Did you get anything music-wise? Did you get anything done?
Probably not, you know.
No. All right. You had good time. Good memories.
Yeah. You know, we got serious. Once we got back, we got serious again about it, you know.
Yeah. And you, for people that don't know, all of us Star Wars geeks, we have this inside and out, but, like, you actually got to play, Steven and you both played characters, like, on Jabba's sail barge that Luke killed, right? So tell them a little bit about that. And
yeah, well, it was, you know, it wasn't really a big deal. You know, it wasn't like they were even really considered much more than, like, background characters, the ones that we ended up doing. So,
yeah.
You know, as
now
I was working
are.
As
now
a stand-in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the toy set, basically. So the toy set, when they came out with a sail barge and all of the characters that went along with the scene, then the character actually got a name then, I think, at that point. But when I put on the costume, I don't think none of those characters really had names. They were just featured number 76-519, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you
right.
Put this on,
and,
you know.
And then George Lucas said, "Okay, I can make money out of this guy. That's a Gamorrean guard. Yeah, that's him." And
yeah, you know,
Watu, and yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, I would assume it's probably the toy companies, you know, that actually, because, you know, you had to give them names, you know, to be able to sell them, I guess, you know. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so we didn't. Yeah, I mean, so we weren't there to do anything like that. I mean, Steven was just there basically hanging out with me, and it would just they just happened to, you know, one day there was and I was doing the stand-in work, and then at one point I did photo doubling for my father, which it's not like doing, you know, I'm not a stunt guy, but and I, you know, stunt guys would be quick to tell you, you know, you're not a stunt man because, you know, they work hard at it. But
that's art. Yeah, it's an art form, and it's
in itself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, at one point they put me in Lando's in skiff guard armor, and then when they needed to have him hanging off the skiff in the background while other shots were things were going off in the shot, you know, it was actually me in the harness dressed like him, because they don't really need to use the actor for that, and they don't really need a stunt guy.
We can't have Billy D get hurt. Let's put Corey out there.
Well, you know, it wasn't anything really that dangerous or anything, but it's just that, you know, being hanging up like 25, 30 feet in the air in an uncomfortable harness, grabbing you in your areas.
Those areas again. those places.
It's not like, you know, you don't want to put the actor in that. As, you know, you want to avoid putting them in that as much as you can. So sort of like, you know, when you're a stand-in, you fill the void sometimes between what a stunt might be or a stunt guy might do, or what they might call a stunt. You're kind of like a filler between the actor and the actual stunt guy himself. So that, you know, that was part of what I did there. And then also the whole Clat 2 thing was like I think it was one day that they decided they, you know, there was a lot of injuries on the set, and, you know, so everybody was sort of like covering for whatever they could cover for. And, you know, they asked me if I wanted to do it, and I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Sure. I'll do, you know, background work as the creature. And they put that latex mask on your head in the 110 degree heat. You're like,
I mean, everyone's like, oh, he was in Star Wars, and you're like, yeah, this sucks. This is 250 degrees in this mask.
Yeah. It's like, it's not as glamorous as everybody wants to believe it is. You know, it's hard work, you know, but, you know, making movies is hard work. I mean, of course it's an honor to have been part of it in that way, you know.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about something like a week out of my entire life, and here I am talking about it still, you know, and trying to remember the details, which get foggier and more foggy, like, as the years go by. So,
oh, yeah,
you know,
for sure.
You know, I try to give the most accurate, memory of the experience that I possibly can. But yeah, that's.
Well, I think you might have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You just happen to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. When it comes to the memories, I was thinking you might just have to, you know, get at a conference sometime, one of the Comic Cons or a Star Wars convention, and go, okay, well, what did I do again? And ask the fans, because they'll tell you.
Right.
they remember it more than you do. I remember I was talking to Dr. Fink, who was in Prince and the Revolution. And he and I were having dinner one night, and we were talking about, and you know, he's like, man, a lot of times people will come up and ask about certain shows they were at and how this particular recording went of the song. He's like, because that was like 30, 40 years. He's like, I don't remember that stuff. Like, and I feel bad because they want to, hey, when you guys recorded this, what was this like? And he's like, yeah, some of the big moments, but there's things I just don't remember anymore. It's like, it was my job.
Yeah,
but they want, you know, when the fans are passionate, I mean, that's, they want to know everything and they remember everything. So, you know, if your memory gets real bad, just like, you know, ask a fan at one of the comments. They'll write it out for you.
Yeah, I mean, that used to freak me out. You know, like the first time I ever did a Q&A, I was like nervous. I was like, well, what if they ask me questions that they already know the answers to that I don't know the answers to? You know?
And that probably happened, right? I mean, they know. We start.
Well,
with
you know, the thing
stuff.
Is. Well, the thing is, it's like, you know, they're asking me to tell tell what happened and how I experienced it from my point of view. So there really is nobody else that can, you know, that can come from that angle. I mean, it's I'm sort of sharing my own version of the experience. And so, you know, you can't really go wrong. I mean, you know.
And then if you forget, you can bluff it because we don't know better. Right. Like, I'll tell you, well, it was like this and it was like this, and we weren't there. We don't know. So I could talk Star Wars all night with you, and we don't want to do that.
Right.
You have a lot of things that I'm really geeked that you've, you know, done, and that was, you know, the music that, you know, you've done over the last 8-10 years that I've known you. Really enjoyed it. The 3D Nucleus stuff. Yeah, no, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. 3D Nucleus, super funky, super cool. And then the latest project, what is it, Sonic Biotic? And
yeah.
So just tell us about your music and tell us about, you know, start at the beginning of maybe the 3D Nucleus days and what you were trying to do with it and then to now. And just kind of tell us what it means to you. I know it's super important to you and it's one of your big passions. So, again, fire away.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you taking an interest. I appreciate everybody out there that takes an interest in what I'm doing because, you know, a lot of what I'm doing connects to Star Wars, but it goes far, far beyond that. But yeah, I mean, I was in the music industry. I've always been a musician, a songwriter, and, you know, I've been recording and producing music for a long time. I mean, and I wrote my first song when I was like 10 years old. So, you know, people always ask me, well, why didn't you become an actor? And, you know, it's because I didn't really have any interest in acting. My interest was always music. You know, I've always been into music. And my father's a huge music fan, too. I mean, he listens to jazz and he listens to everything. I mean, we used to share music with each other all the time. So, you know, I grew up in a family that was had a lot of music and art in it. My grandmother, you know, played piano and she always had a Davy grand piano in her New York City apartment. I don't even know how I got in there, but
really,
probably had to hoist it through a window.
Yeah, no
break
doubt.
It down into pieces.
Yeah,
but
IKEA version.
Yeah, right. So I've sort of been involved in music like all my life. So it's you know, it's just a normal sort of thing for me, but. You know, in the 80s, Stephen and I had a band called The Atmosphere, and then Atmosphere had many incarnations, and Simon Sassoon, who was related to Fidel Sassoon, the hairdresser who pioneered a lot of haircuts and products, hair products in the 70s and 80s, and then he was lead singer in the band also for a while, and so it went through a lot of different renditions, but and so there's a R&B singer, Jeffrey Osborne, Joe Osborne is his nephew, who sang leads in the last rendition of the band, which sort of evolved into another band. So it's been going on a long time. And then in 91, I became a fitness trainer because I sort of got disillusioned with all the stuff that was happening in the business. And, you know, I had a record deal, development deal that basically went nowhere. Like a lot of people think that, you know, when you get signed to a record company, it's like, whoa, you've made it. And, you know, that was what I thought too. But, you know, a lot of times, a lot of those, the projects that they sign or artists that they sign, some of them don't really even get released. There's just so much stuff and, you know, going on in the company. But yeah, so, you know, I got caught up in a merger and stuff didn't get put out, and so then I was just like, you know, I need to just take a break from it because I've been working so hard on music for so long, and I just felt like I needed a break from it, and so I did. I mean, I started my business as a trainer, and you know, I've been doing fitness, working out all my life. I studied kinesiology, and then started training people, and you know, took a long hiatus from doing music, and then. Probably in about, maybe, I guess it was probably maybe 2015 or something like that. One of my really close friends was encouraging me to go back because she heard some of my old music. And she was like, you should, why aren't you like still making music? Like, and I was like, because I hate the music industry.
That's good reason.
But you know, there's a whole business side to it, and when you're an artist, you know, you don't really want to be involved in all that stuff, really. But anyway, so you know, the industry sort of changed over the years, and then you know, you've got streaming services, you've got all these ways that you can release your own music. I mean, of course, you don't have the promotional sort of machine behind you if you're not signed to a label, but I mean, it doesn't stop anybody from releasing music and doing what you want to do. So when I got back into it, I just decided, you know, I really wanted to do it because it's something I love doing and not because, you know, I want to necessarily try and earn a living doing it, because that's really difficult to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing that, like, it's funny because I've talked to so many artists that I say this, it's a double-edged sword of, it's anyone can put something on the internet now and you can be finally get heard, but then you have to separate yourself from the gazillion people that are doing the same thing. And so rather than back in the day, trying to get signed and actually develop a record, now it's like you can do that, but now you've got to get noticed. If you want to do it for the business aspect of it, if you do it for the love, then it's a great tool to have the internet now. But if you're trying to get, you know, make it financially, it's so hard because everybody's got a record. So, but yes, go ahead.
That's true.
2015.
Yeah, it does make it very competitive. But yeah, I just told myself that when I got back into it, I was going to do it because it's something I love doing. And, you know, my friend convinced me that it was something that was part of who I am. And she was right. She was like, you know, it feeds my soul, you know, to make music. I enjoy making music. Like, some people are in bands and they cover songs and whatnot. That's never really been my thing. My thing is, like, making my own music. So 3D Nucleus just started off with a friend of mine, Matt, who and then another friend of ours, Curtis, another bass player, who I met at Sam Ash, actually, when I bought another bass, because I had a bass, but I wanted to get another four-string bass, and I bought another bass, and I went in there to buy some accessories, and he was in there playing, and I was like, dude, I'd like to learn some things from you, you know, because as a player, you know, I've been playing for a long time, but, you know, you always want to evolve and learn and expand what you know how to do. And, you know, otherwise you kind of get stuck in a rut doing the same things all the time. But so, like, I was trying to expand and do some different things. And so 3D Nucleus just started off with, like, doing live recordings. Like, so we have a little room in my house that has been dubbed the Lux Lounge by Matt's wife, Allison, actually, Luxe. And so we, you know, it's just like a hangout. You know, I didn't want to actually make a studio or anything like that. I just wanted a place that we could just hang out and play and jam and just, you know, get into music. And so I was fortunate enough, you know, to get, meet some other guys and start bringing different people in. And, you know, Jimmy, who his drum kit lives at my house now, and we nicknamed him Bigfoot because one time we looked over and he was playing drums and he didn't have any shoes on. I was like, what are you doing, man? I don't know. I just feel it more like that. I was like, oh, okay. I can dig it, you know.
But his inner Sasquatch.
But he's a really, but he's a really funky drummer, man, and heavy. And, you know, he's been playing in churches for a long time and like, worship bands and stuff. But
if you're playing in churches, you're funky. You got to have that.
Yeah. And he's been playing, you know, since he was a kid. I mean, so it's just like in him. And so we just had to sort of, like, you know, pull our styles together. And then, so 3D Nucleus began as sort of like a jam band, sort of, not even a band, but a jam project. So we just have different musicians over and record jam sessions. I mean, we might have like a 2-hour jam session and like record 5 or 6 ideas for songs. And then some of them might be 15 minutes long. And then I would sit there later and like go, wow, you know, there's some cool stuff in there. And then edit it into a finished, you know, bite sized 3.5 or 4 minute piece of music, you know, so that people could listen to it. And then a lot of my friends were like, "Well, I want to hear the whole jam session now," you know.
Yeah. Did you like, put those online too? I thought you did. Didn't you put a couple of those up?
There's some videos on YouTube that are parts of jam sessions. But
okay,
some of those jam
okay.
sessions. Yeah, some of those jam sessions could go on for like 15 or 20 minutes on one groove, you know, like you on a board. Because we're just experimenting and trying different things and seeing where it leads us. And so that was the whole idea behind 3D Nucleus Project, which wound up connecting the Star Wars to the Star Wars universe because my father was doing a parody for the BBC. And Jamie, who was doing the parody for the BBC in London, was asking me if I had any music that would, because they knew I did music, and he was like, you know, we'd like to use your music for the background music in the parody. I'm like, oh, that'd be really cool, because I think I have just the thing. So, you know, Jimmy has an electronic kit, a Roland kit. And so we were messing around with some different sounds and stuff on the drums, and it had a real futuristic vibe to it. We were just kidding around, and we were calling it, you know, the last, you know, party on Alderaan or whatever. We're just calling it different things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I sent it to them. They said, this is like perfect. So then they sent me back video footage, and I was like, what am I going to do, you know, with this video footage of my dad? I need to, like, do something with it. And I thought, well, let's just turn it into a song. And that's when we named it Cloud City Funk. And
I love it. I love it. Yeah, so, it's awesome.
So we ended up going to Star Wars Celebration and filming a complete video. I mean, I hit one of my friends up who's a photographer, Mark, and he was like, I'm going to be at Celebration. I was like, cool, let's shoot some video. So we had intended to shoot a few hours of video and then enjoy Celebration, but that never actually happened. We ended up shooting video like every day, all day.
Nice. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, when you're trying to do a Star Wars parody and you're at Star Wars Celebration and everybody's wearing some sort of cool costume, you have all these different people, and people started to find out about it, and they're like, you know, they want to be in it, you know, because they saw what we were doing, and we actually got Ray Park to like dance in it, which like I didn't even know he was like a badass dancer, but he, you know, danced with a double lightsaber. Yeah. He did a bunch of footage with him and Mark Hamill. We got him to dance in it. People were like, you're never going to get him in it. And I just got lucky one day. I just walked up to him and while he was at the end of his day signing, and I had my whole spiel ready to what I was going to tell him. And he started talking to me, how's your dad doing? He had laryngitis. And I said, Mark, will you dance with me? We're just doing a fun video. And he was like, sure, you know. Like, yeah, he's just so cool, you know. And
that's great.
I don't have to say anything, you know. So we did that, and that's on YouTube. So, yep, you know, that's the whole 3D Nucleus vibe. So we did a video called The Beat Strikes Back, which we used Strider in it, who's the hip-hop trooper. And I cut together a lot of footage that he already had and did a video using that. And then, you know, that was the remix. And then the original Beat Strikes Back, we shot at Dragon Con, most of the footage. And at the last party on Alderaan, we did a lot of, we actually played the song there. And then we shot a lot of video while there was like thousands of people dancing to the song, which was kind of cool.
Super cool, yeah.
Yeah, so 3D Nucleus kind of connects to my whole affiliation with Star Wars, some of it, but it's really like a funk-based music project because I'm really passionate about funk and funky music. And but
well,
like, you know, my whole idea. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, yes. Oh, before, like, when people go to, like, they're listening to this, the thing is, it's surrounded by Star Wars, and the videos are, but if the music's flat out funky, I mean, the music is legit, and the music's, so, like, even though the videos may be fun, like, you know, people, when they check out the music aspect of it, like, that's serious stuff, like, that is serious funk, and it's awesome. So, yeah, it's definitely, like, you know, you weren't, you sure, bro, you weren't, like, you know, you're not compromising the music to do right. something connected to Star Wars. The music stands on its own, mm-hmm. and that's and it's awesome. So, you know, it's just so
yeah.
You know,
people, I mean, the connection to Star Wars is sort of like this, like an afterthought. I mean, most of the stuff is just like funk bass grooves that we come up with, and you know. And my whole idea with funk is like to keep it moving forward. Like, so like there's a lot of really great funk bands out there that, and they kind of stay true to the original formula, like, and the 70s vibe, which is really cool to do that and bring it back. But like my whole idea was like, you know, when George Clinton started doing stuff in the 70s, you know, and they took what James Brown was doing and went into outer space with it. And it was like nothing anybody had ever heard before. And I was like, you know, if we could get some of that back, if people would experiment more with it now, you know, it'd be really, really cool. And there's a few people out there doing that, but yeah. that was my goal. I was like, I just want to experiment. I don't want to like stay with the same formulas and the same sounds. I want to like yeah. do something different, but make it really funky in its own way. And so that's kind of what 3D Nucleus became. You know,
it's a form. It's a form.
Yeah.
There's like no rules. Like, you know, there's you can do so much to expand what it is, you know, and
mm-hmm.
unlike a lot of other genres where it's like, this is a country song, this is a pop song, this is this. Funk has got
right.
like very few rules, and it's just,
yeah.
it's so perfect for creativity, and it's just awesome.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
and the other thing about it is, and I always tell people, funk is like a flavor that fits into all genres of music. Like, so you can do hip hop, you can do country, you can do classical music. I mean, there's some guys like there's an ensemble called Black Violin, and they do like hip hop with like classical music. So like you can fuse funk into just about any type of music. So it's really just a flavor, you know, or a rhythmic feel that you can add to things. And so
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
where, you know, sort of like the Sonic Biotic project kind of came together. I was like, you know, I want to go beyond, like I want to start using, you know, loops and DJ stuff and all kinds of stuff, like just combining all kinds of different things together and different feels and classical feels and whatever else. And so Sonic Biotic came together, the Sound of Living Music, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so cause we sort of meld all these flavors together. And my friend Megan Hickey, who is really great with loop arrangements, and she's a really cool artist. She's done a lot of the art that we use. So, like, I use a lot of art from different artists and then create some of it myself. But the whole idea was, like, sort of combine music and art and really sort of like experiment more with doing that and not so much, you know, sticking to the sort of guidelines that we had, you know, with 3D Nucleus. But so yeah, her and I started doing some early loop arrangements together, and then that sort of grew, and then I started doing some more loop arrangements and then adding live instruments. So we're kind of combining live instruments and loops and all that stuff together and art to try and really just sort of do something really cool and experimental. We're still trying to figure out, you know, who the audience is, because it's really difficult to categorize what we're doing, but it's sort of like an alternative pop or trip hop type vibe to
yeah.
it. I don't know. I mean, you've heard it. I don't know what you would call
yeah,
it. But.
That's what, I think you're right. It doesn't really have a place, and that's what makes it amazing. It's a thing. There's music I call headphone music. And so
mm-hmm.
it's the kind of music you pop your best headphones on, right? You get everybody
uh-huh.
in the room and you shut your eyes and you
take a journey.
Yeah. And that's what I think it is. I think it's the, you know,
yeah, that's a good way to
yeah.
describe it. Actually. I mean, I think it is kind of like that. You just get into it and you do.
And you're not going to like, you know, you're not going to be at the beach, you know, playing it as a beach album, you know, you're not going to be playing volleyball.
Right.
It's a music that is a trip that you just take, and it's headphone music. 'Cause
yeah,
all the little
yeah.
sounds and all the little things. And it's like, It's, you know, it's cool. It's really cool. And it's, you know, it's,
there's like probably, you know, between, and I use some of the same people who are playing on 3D Nucleus got their playing in there too, like Monty Pittman, who did a lot of the guitar on the first EP, the 3D Nucleus EP we did. He played with Madonna live. He's played with her live on the road for years, and he has his own heavy metal project, and he also been touring with Ministry. So he's like a fantastic guitar player, but he's very versatile. And, you know, when we first met, we met at Celebration, and I didn't even remember us having a conversation, and like he hit me up on Facebook and it was like, man, I want to jam with you guys. And I was like, really? Yeah, cool. And I started looking at his Facebook profile and I saw these pictures of this blonde chick who looked pretty good looking. And I was like, wait a minute, is that Madonna?
Oh yeah, that's my.
And it turned out it was.
Job.
So I had no idea, but then I listened to his stuff, and his stuff was like serious heavy metal, good stuff. But I was like, you know, like sometimes we combine a rock edge with our funkiness too, and because I used to get into Funkadelic, and you know, I was a huge Jimi Hendrix fan growing up and all that.
Sure.
I wanted to be Jimi Hendrix when I started playing guitar, and I figured out really quickly that I couldn't be. But
yeah, sounded good.
But yeah, so you know, we hit it off musically. I mean, chemistry was really good. I sent him a track, and I thought it had a little bit of an edge to it. So I thought, well, maybe this will be in his wheelhouse. I had no idea what his playing style was like. I didn't know how versatile he was. And he sent me back some of the funkiest guitar tracks I've ever heard, man. It was like, oh my God, this stuff just kills it. And so, you know, just like working with different musicians all around the world. There's like 20 something musicians now at this point that are part of both of these projects. A couple of guys in Canada, Steve Boudreau and Brian, who's also a huge Star Wars nerd who plays sax. And so we just trade tracks, you know, like I'll send them an idea and they'll send me back some tracks. And then I'll listen to what they've recorded and then edit in what I like. And then we just sort of work back and forth with each other that way, you know, sort of, you know, adding things or changing things in that way. So it's really a cool way to create music and collaborate with other musicians. I mean, what I do. That's why I call them music projects and not bands, because we're not sort of limited to the same people.
Right.
I'm sort of at the nucleus of the whole thing, which is where the name came from. But,
yeah.
You know,
you're the maestro, and you're leading the band.
I'm the conductor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're like,
the producer.
Okay. A little more bass, a little this, a little that. Yeah. I mean,
and they
like
trust me, you know.
The vision is your vision, and when you hear a track, and then, you know, what comes out is, you know, Corey D approved. It's got that stamp. Like, that's what I had.
Well, yeah,
with a lot of collaboration,
make it,
of course.
Yeah, I guess I give it a cohesiveness. You know, like, give them a lot of freedom to do what they want, and, you know, we co-write together. Like, Kelly Musler, who I work with, who's a really cool vocalist, and you know, her and I hit it off just meeting each other over, you know, social media. And you know, I had her write some stuff. And a few times I've written lyrics. And I sent one of our most popular songs, which is Cast Adrift. I wrote the lyrics to her, to most of that. And it sent it to her because it was about being alone and feeling isolated, but not really, but being okay with it. Because that's kind of like the kind of person I am. Like, I like to be in my room making music and stuff, and I get charged up from that more than being out in crowds. But so I was writing about that, and I sent it to her, and she connected with it and like put down like the perfect vocal for it, and then we developed it from there. And so we just kind of hit it off musically, and so we've been working on other songs together that I'm going to put out too. And then she's got some music. I played bass on one of her tracks, and then we're working on another track together that's for her EP. And so, you know, and like, so there's like, it's just really fun to create with a lot of other talented people. Like, I can sit in my room and make tracks all by myself, and I don't really need anybody to do it, but because I can play multiple instruments and use loops and things. But it's really cool to have a different perspective, you know, like working with different people and have them bring their perspective. Because sometimes, you know, you send it to a different musician and they'll play something totally unexpected. Like, you'll be like, what's that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it'll take you to things into a whole fresh direction. And it's like, you know, so I just, that's the beauty of it. Like, most people don't realize, like, majority of the really big hit songs and throughout history, like, they're written by multiple people. Like, people are collaborating and putting in different parts, and
yeah.
That's how it's like a soup that just comes together with the right flavor, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it's supposed to be, I think, too. I think that's the beauty of music, yeah. I have no musical talent, but boy, when I can sit around and watch some people jam together or just watch a band that's played together a long time and just feed off each other and they improvise during a show and you're just like, wow, like that's what music's about right there. It's for the listener just as much as the players. It's amazing. The power of music is amazing. And when you hit something,
really,
you know,
is.
You hit it. You know, you hit it. Like, you know, when you get that track.
And I'm a real.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I'm a real listener too. Like, I'm a music listener. I love to get inspiration from other people. And like, you know, I listen to everything from like Billie Eilish to like, you know, everything. I listen to it all. Hip hop, whatever. I mean, country, some country tracks, you know, just like, I just like progressive music that's sort of like taking things in another direction, or, you know, or taking it in a fresh new way. Like, you know, it's just like, ooh, that's interesting. You know, some people like to listen to stuff that's reminiscent of the past, but for me, it's more like, you know, I want to hear something new. Yeah.
When I was younger, I don't know if it's an age thing, but when I was younger, I was very much, I mean, I was very much a funk guy and Prince and the whole Minneapolis sound. And
yeah,
you know, just, I was all about like R&B and funk, and I didn't listen to a lot of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
About two years ago, I started listening to like 80s hair bands. And I love it. I love it. And my wife is in my car sometimes, and now she's kind of bought into it now too. But she'll be like, it's always on this classic rock station that plays basically 80s and early 90s, you know, hair band.
You know, Motley Crue.
I love
and
that.
Like Rat.
Yeah, the Crue.
And all those guys.
Yeah, yeah. Skid Row. And
they were playing like at the Troubadour and stuff, man. Like, they were playing at the Troubadour in L.A. and stuff, a lot of those bands, you know. And that was like the place to be. And like, you know, Guns N' Roses and all those guys, man.
And I was such a snob. I was such a snob back then. I wouldn't listen to it. Now it's like, this stuff is amazing. So here I am, 54, down the highway, you know, acting like this rock song's brand new. I'm like, well, it is.
Right.
Oh, it's
fresh,
good stuff, man.
You know, like, yeah.
I think I've mellowed with age.
So
I think
vast.
Yeah.
But music is such a vast universe, man. I mean, there's so much going on. You know, and
absolutely.
So like, you know, like when we're doing this music, I'm trying, my goal is to do universal sounding stuff that most anybody could listen to and find something in it or appreciate something about it, you know? And then I've also been trying to get some of these tracks placed, like, so sync licensing, submitting for that, like where you get songs on commercials and TV shows or movies or whatever else, you know? So I'm making art music available for people who want to license it in that way also, which is a good way to make revenue, you know, now if you're an independent artist, you know.
Yeah, got
to
make some money.
And get known. Yeah.
Yeah.
And get known, you know, it's a good way to for people to discover you as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting there watching a TV commercial and I like, you know, I roll it back and, you know, on my DVR, I'm watching it and I Shazam it, you know, it's just, like, who is that? Who is that? You know, like,
right,
I discover
right.
a lot of artists that way, just from TV shows and commercials sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, and on the TV shows, there's such good, like, such great music they use now. You know, it's like the soundtracks are, like, you know, all these different I know, like Stranger Things, you know, just like the stuff going on with the music of that show, where it's like, you know, different versions of songs and different things these shows pull, and it can open up a whole new world for an artist, you know. I mean, like, look at Kate Bush, where, like, it just, that song explodes, her song and that was on Stranger Things, and boom, you know, like a whole new generation now, it knows who Kate Bush is and is looking her up, buying her stuff, streaming her stuff, and it's like, so cool.
Right.
Like, what? Yeah. And I, you know, I grew up in the 80s. I never heard that song till Stranger Things. So, yeah. I was in my bubble then. Kate Bush. That's some English junk. I don't know what that is. Anyway.
Man, I used to love, like, Thomas Dolby and, like, all that stuff back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in a band, you know, it was in the 80s. So, like, new wave music was, like, deep, like The Police and and the Motels and all those bands, man. It was like really the Pretenders, you know.
Yeah.
Really great stuff out there, man, in that era. There was a lot of experimentation musically, I think, in the 80s, even more so than now. Yeah.
For sure. I've been into Men at Work again lately. That's one of those bands that
I remember those guys. I did
like in the 80s, and then I just sort of faded away, but in the last couple of years again it's like, I mean, you know, once you get past Down Under is, you know, a classic, but once you get into the albums, it's like, these are great albums. And yeah, Men at Work is really cool. So that's another one I jumped on. I don't want to keep you all night. We're going to have to do a part two sometime because there's so much to cover. Uh-huh. But I do want to talk about your book before we leave, because you just wrote a book.
Okay.
And so tell me about your book and where people can pick it up and what it's about.
Well, it's called Random Thoughts of an Eternal Optimist. So what happened was on social media, I've been on Facebook for a long time before it was popular, pretty much, you know, probably 2007, something like that. Everybody was on MySpace at that time, designing MySpace pages. And I was like going, yeah, but Facebook is so much cleaner and like cool. And so it started to catch on. And as it did, you know, I had a circle of friends and whatnot. And my circle of friends started to grow. But I used to always, you know, I'm a very positive and optimistic person. And as a fitness lifestyle coach, you know, I try to bring that optimism to what I do. And I try to encourage people. And, you know, when you're teaching someone and trying to help them improve their health, you realize real quickly that it's not, most of it isn't really physical. Really more of it is mental than it is physical sometimes. I mean, you know, you can show anybody how to do an exercise, but, you know, they're not going to get results unless they're really mentally connected to what it is that they're doing. So, you know, and I've been into philosophy, you know, for a long time. When I started martial arts when I was 12 years old, you know, I started getting into, you know, different philosophies and then following a lot of Bruce Lee's teachings and then, you know, learning about Buddhism and these things. So, you know, my connection to the philosophical world has always kind of been there throughout my life, and I've always used it, you know, tried to use it in positive ways to help other people. And so I've just been putting these sort of random thoughts up on social media, which I still do, which I'm sure you read them sometimes.
You do.
But
Yeah.
And so what I really try to do with my random thoughts is to bring optimism to people and to help people see things in a different way, because sometimes we go through very negative things in life, and we think, you know, it's the end of the world, but then it brings us somewhere else or to another experience that we wouldn't, you know, have had if it wasn't for the really negative things that happened. So, you know, I believe that a lot of things have a purpose in our life, and if we recognize that, we can use them. And so, you know, a lot of my friends who read my quotes or they call them quotes, they're not really quotes, they're just my random thoughts, have told me how much it has helped them. And I was like, wow, well, that's really cool. You know, I didn't think, I'm not out here thinking, well, I can help the world and all that, but, you know, if it helps one or two people, it's really cool. And sometimes I'll get 300 likes and sometimes I'll get three. But if it just helps one person, it's worth doing. Yeah. So, like, I was at a con one time and had a guy who told me he suffered from depression, and he had been reading my statements that I put up, and that a lot of it had helped him through times that were, like, difficult for him. And he was like tearing up, and I was, you know, we're both standing there not trying not to cry, you know. But it's like every time
that's real stuff right there.
Right. And every time I thought it was sort of insignificant, you know, someone would come along and convince me that, you know, that I should keep doing it. So a lot of people kept saying, you should put your quotes into your thoughts into a book. And I was like, well, you know, I don't really, the whole beauty of the thoughts is that I don't embellish the thoughts. I want people to read them and sort of come up with their own interpretations of what it is. So I purposely don't, I make them short and just something to sort of evoke like different ways of thinking about things. And so, you know, Kimberly Bouchard, who has a series of called Positively Disney, she had me do an interview in one of her books, and then she saw my inspirational thoughts, and she was like, you really should put them in a book. I mean, seriously. And I was like, really? And she's an author, and so she encouraged me, and she also gave me guidance and told me, here's what you need to do, this is what you need to do, here's where you need to start. And, you know, years went by, you know, messing around, because I'm doing music projects and all these other things. And then, you know, I hit my friend up, Randy Martinez, who does a lot of artwork for Star Wars stuff. Like, he did a Mandalorian pinball machine, and he's done some really cool Lando stuff. But so I hit him up about doing the cover for the book. So it's been in development for a while. And, you know, it just, like about a month ago, I got it up on Amazon. So it's being distributed through Amazon, and anybody can buy it. It's doing pretty well right now. A lot of people are buying it. A lot of friends are like taking pictures of them holding up the book, you know, and I'm like,
cool. No, it's totally
like,
cool.
Yeah. And I'm really appreciative of that. You know, it's not about the money though. It's just, you know, if I make some money off of it, that would be great. But it's really more about sharing these thoughts with people, and like hopefully it will help some people, you know, get through tough times, or help them look at things differently if they need to, or whatever it is that they have to be going.
It's done it for me. I mean, I can recall my dad passed away a year and a half ago, and there were just some things that you put up right after that just were, you know, things that just kind of help me get through the day, you know, just the hard days. And
I'm glad.
Man, thank you.
Really,
yeah. And
happy to hear that. But
that's what they're there to do.
It's so trippy how, you know, people will tell me, I'll put up something and they'll say, that was exactly what I needed to hear today. And then it's just like, that was the one person that I did it for today, you know.
That's right. That was a three like day. But
yeah,
no, I mean, what we're on this earth to do is to, you know, to help and love people and do the best we can to make other people's lives better. And I just think
I believe I've always.
Yeah, I do too, 100%. And I keep trying to write a book, and everybody around me keeps saying, no, don't do it. So I'm glad you have people around you. They're like, Jedi, you don't need to write a book. No, you're good. But no.
Well, it's kind of like it becomes an exercise in your own sort of it's therapeutic in ways. Like, you know, when I did it, it was just really more about me following through and doing it than anything. Like, I just thought, you know, I'm just going to follow through and do it. I'm not going to worry about the result or how successful or not successful it is or isn't. I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And sometimes we have to do that. We just have to, it's helpful to us as well as it can be helpful to other people. But yeah, I mean, it's just, sometimes it's just a matter of like following through on something, you know, and that's what this was like for me. It was like, I'm going to follow through and I'm going to do this. I don't care if it takes me 3 years, you know?
Yeah, right.
I have so many random thoughts, man. Like, I have like hundreds of them, like in a file that, cause I write them all the time. I don't share them all the time, but right. I mean, I could definitely do like, you know, the next book would be like more random thoughts, and then, you know, like random thoughts again. Like, I could do a whole volume instead of random
Encyclopedia
thoughts.
Britannica. Encyclopedia Britannica pretty soon. Book 27 by Corey D. Williams.
Right.
And it'd be get like two thoughts that that book would be two pages. Like,
right.
But I had to share it.
Right. So this one's got like 115 random thoughts in it. But there's a lot more where those came from. So if people, if people find it helpful, you know, I'll probably keep doing it. You know, I'll just keep doing them.
Just making your mark, man. It's about, you know, like I said, on a personal level, making your mark with people, and that's what you gotta. That's what life's about, and I think that's cool, and that's a vibe that I've always liked about you, and I know since we first started talking on Facebook, I was like, I always just liked your vibe, and I always thought you were just a super cool cat and just real, genuine. Like, I remember one time I was trying to get in shape, which I'm still working on, and I messaged you and you gave me a whole workout plan. You're like, hey man, like, you know, do this, this, and this, and just
right.
That you took the time for me. I didn't do it, you know, but you know, what's another story? That's a whole other show. Getting Jedi into shape.
I like helping people, man. You know, like enough people have done a lot for me, and I just want to turn around and do the same for others, man. That's what it's all about, you know. Everything can't always be about profit. I mean, we all got to make a living, but sometimes, you know, you just have to do good things, and it's important for us to do good things, man, for each
Absolutely.
Other. Because people are just so self-centered, you know, these days, especially with social media being the way it is, and people getting into their own thing and trying to get attention, you know, and all that stuff. But
we have
to remember to sort of, step out.
The world needs more positivity, and that's what you do, and I totally appreciate it, and that's what I try to do. It's sad when you just, you can get really downtrodden by jumping online and just scrolling around for a while. But I still believe, like, most people are good. Like, especially after I put one of my podcasts up and then I read the comments. It's a sad place.
And a lot of times people blame social media for that, but I think social media is a tool like all other tools. And if you use a tool properly, it's useful. If you don't use it properly, it can make a mess. And so it's like, you know, a lot of what social media is made up of is our friends. And if we're surrounded by a lot of negative or narrow-minded people, then that's what we're going to see, you know. So we can manage it. We have the ability to manage it and use it in positive and useful ways. And so that's what I think, like, more people need to do.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Going on rants and tirades and all those kinds of things.
Love each other, help each other get through it, man, whatever it is. Right on.
Right. Yeah, man, let's support one another, you know.
Exactly. So next time I post something, you know, new podcast, you know, people out there listening, say good nice things about me, okay? I can't just have my mom post nice things about me. I got to have other people do, you know. So
I mean, there's an old saying, and it's a really good one. It's like, if you don't have something good to say, then don't say anything at all, you know.
Yeah. That means you can type it, though. You can type it. You ain't saying it. I'm not saying it, but I'm typing.
Right.
Anyway, yes, it was.
People are emboldened.
We're gonna do. You're gonna come back on later sometime, right? You promise? We'll hit other.
Sure, man. Absolutely. Anytime,
we'll
man.
Do,
we're cool.
We'll pick three subjects, and you know, give us a week to think about it. And we'll just talk about it. Sounds fun.
Right.
I think we've
covered Star Wars pretty well.
I love Star Wars, but you know, I mean, I didn't even really want to talk Star Wars with you tonight, but.
Right.
Like, I kind of have to, because people are like, And then, of course, I'm a total.
I get it.
Like you. Yeah, you get it. But
you can't
time,
be called DJ Jedi and not talk
and not
about Star Wars. You know?
Exactly. They'd be like, this is the Jedi Nation podcast. And
right.
You can ask one Star Wars question. But next time we're not. Next time we're going Star Wars.
Be warned.
That's right, people. The next episode, don't expect to be the Morian Guard, Sarlacc pits, or none of that stuff. It ain't gonna happen.
Right.
We will do that soon. I don't know when, but we're gonna do it. And again, thanks for coming on, my friend, and good to talk to you.
I appreciate you.
I love you, brother. You're a good man. You're one of the good ones.
All right, man.
All right, talk to you soon, buddy.
Keep doing what you're doing, man.
I promise.
All right.
I will. All right.
All right.
Okay.
See ya.
All right. Bye.
And that puts the wraps on another edition of the Jedi Nation podcast. This is DJ Jedi, and I appreciate you guys tuning in. Thank you, Corey D. Williams, for joining us tonight. Had a great time with your brother, and please come back soon. We have a bunch more to talk about and laugh about. Thank you, Jeff Luna and the Room Music Radio family for giving me an opportunity to talk and talk and talk and talk and yes, talk. And hey, y'all take care. God bless. Take care of each other. Take care of others and spread the love. DJ Jedi, out.
Life around. If you drive a man to the river's edge, someone's gonna drown.